Fire is such a powerful tool for creating change in your life. Think of fire as an energetic reset button, a force that burns through anything that no longer serves you, clearing and cleansing so that your soul has the space and clarity to flourish and thrive. It's a purifying element, there to send up in smoke all the negative energy associated with regrets, past pains, or destructive habits. It's also a tool of radical manifestation, allowing you to commit to your desires as you hand them over to the universe. And there is one day in the year that fire will serve this purpose in the most magnificent way. The summer solstice, or the night of San Juan, depending on where you live. Welcome home. This is Mind and Body, and I'm your host, Elena Díaz. Let's get started. The summer solstice, June the 21st, marks the start of the summer month and the longest day of the year before the nights start to grow longer again. Since prehistory, the summer solstice has been seen as a significant time of year in many cultures and has been marked by festivals and celebrations all around the world. It is thought that at some point during the 4th century, the Christian Church established St. John the Baptist Day at midsummer, and since then, both traditions, the pagan and the Christians, have kind of merged into one with the same wonderful and sometimes weird ways to celebrate the energy of the sun, celebrate life. And what better way to celebrate the energy of the sun than to light a fire? Well, I know that midsummer celebrations are big in the United Kingdom, but let me tell you about the ones in Spain, basically because they are the ones I'm more familiar with, and I do believe they are worth a description. Huge bonfires are lit around midnight, usually on the beach, so much so that you can tell the smoke from the mist and you can see the fires all the way through the coastline. People jump over the fire to cleanse themselves of their mistakes or to let go of their burdens. It's a way to face your own personal ghosts. When you jump, you witness the transformation of a powerful energy, fear, into another powerful energy, strength. And in some parts of Spain, they will actually write down on paper all these things that no longer serve them, and then toss the papers into the fire, so in that way we can use the fire to, let's say, to burn away things that threaten our mental and emotional well-being. When I started thinking about the contents for this episode, one name immediately came to mind: Frida Kahlo. Frida Kahlo was a Mexican painter who lived in the first half of the 20th century, and she was known for her many portraits and self-portraits and for her use of a naive folk style to explore deep and relevant questions such as identity, post-colonialism, gender, class and race in Mexican society. And she is also known for painting about her experience of chronic pain and grief. Before Frida Kahlo reached her 25th birthday, she had contracted polio and survived a horrific bus accident that left her with a plethora of physical and psychological repercussions. During her whole life, she had a strong desire to become a mother, and she got pregnant 3 times, but due to complications because of her still damaged pelvis, she lost the 3 of them before they were born. Kahlo's breakthrough was the time she spent in Detroit with her husband, Diego Rivera, due to some job commitments he had there. Frida hated most everything in Detroit. She was conflicted by capitalism, racism, and in general she found it superficial and boring in the city. In the first few months of the couple's stay in Detroit, she miscarried her first baby and turned 25 in a hospital bed. There she started channeling her grief into art, and she painted the disturbing and evocative self-portrait titled Henry Ford Hospital. I'm going to try and let's say, show it to you through my description. So imagine this small painting in front of you, just a little bit bigger than your average paper sheet. In the center of the painting, we see Frida Kahlo naked, bloody, and crying on a hospital bed. Kahlo is very small in relation to the bed, and the bed itself is floating and separate from the rest of the painting, as if she didn't relate to the rest of the world and instead lost herself into nothingness. We can see the industrial Detroit skyline far behind her, and the comforting Mexican field surrounding her. The discomfort showed already in the way she painted her body. From the waist up, she turns toward the viewer. From the waist down, she turns away. There are six objects flying around her, each tied to a cord that rests on her stomach, three of them above the bed and three below. Above the bed, left to right, a model of the female reproductive organs and a spinal column, perhaps a connection between her previous skeletal problems and her reproductive problems. Then a male fetus in the center, an expression of her desire to have a boy. And then to the right, there is a snail that Frida said referred to the slowness of the operation. Below the bed, left to right, there is first this small metallic object that has the appearance of a machine. It's not really recognizable, so perhaps a question like why can my body not be repaired? Then in the center, a purple orchid reflecting the support she felt from Diego Rivera. And to the right, a pelvic bone that appears to be a slight distorted or damaged, representing her inability to have children. Kahlo's depiction of her own miscarriage can be something you relate to in your grief journey, or maybe not at all. But she's still one of the few major artists to directly communicate her reproductive grief through visual art. Her grief is personal, and her experience with pregnancy loss is personal too, but the fact that she was able to transform all that pain into powerful art, not only through this painting but through many others too, is an invaluable heritage. Natalia from Spain lost her mom to cancer a few years ago. They were really close, and after her death, Natalia felt lost, like she had lost her anchor. She also missed her physical presence, her touch, her hugs. After some time, she started to develop muscle contractures, tension knots in her upper body, and also insomnia. But for her, the most difficult part of her grief was dealing with her spinning mind, like a room full of balls bouncing randomly in all directions. This mental runaway train drained her to the point that she struggled in all aspects of her life, from her personal relations to her job. At some point during her grief journey, she met a shiatsu therapist, and although she didn't know anything about that technique, she decided to trust and give it a try. Natalia told me that this was an absolute game changer in her process. Soon, most of her physical tensions started to disappear and her mind began to quiet, allowing her to lead what she calls a normal life again. Shiatsu is a fantastic example of the connection between the body and the mind. The word shiatsu translates as finger pressure. It's a type of massage therapy that was primarily developed in Japan with roots in traditional Chinese medicine. The Western approach to illness and disease is that of problems that need to be solved and fixed, with a remedy, usually in the form of a pill. But Eastern medicine believes that both the body and the mind need to be in balance with each other and with its surroundings. The theory behind shiatsu is that our bodies are made up of energy, called qi, and that energy gets blocked because of different reasons, like, for example, the trauma of losing someone you loved. So shiatsu massage helps remove the blockages by realigning meridian points, which balances the qi and eases the body and mind. When we talk about grief, we will usually talk about those five stages we may go through, all the emotions and feelings, or we may just want to talk about the person we lost and remember. But there is an aspect of grief that we hardly explore or mention, our own identity and the way it changes when somebody close to us dies. Part of our self-identity, a big part I would say, comes from the relationships we have with other people. So when someone with whom we have a close relationship dies, my self-identity or the way I see myself will naturally change. All throughout our life, we can be a daughter, a son, a mother, or a father, a wife, a husband, a friend, a life partner. What happens when we lose someone? Who are we now? Suddenly the way you define yourself and the way society defines you has changed. And not to talk about those new roles we may need to take on because they used to be filled by the person who died. Little day-to-day things, you know, or maybe even more important stuff. But anyways, this is hard work. Your essence may still be the same, you're basically the same person, but nevertheless, you feel different and changed. You may occasionally feel childlike as you struggle with your changing identity. You may feel a temporarily heightened dependence on others, as well as feelings of helplessness, frustration, inadequacy, fear. Absolutely, there is a bright side. Many people actually discover that as they work on this need of, let's say, developing a new self-identity, they also develop a renewed confidence in themselves, or a more caring, kind and sensitive part of themselves, or even an assertive part of their identity that empowers them to go on living even though they continue to feel a sense of loss. If you listened to the second episode of this podcast, Earth, you will surely remember the poem that Ollie Brady from the Drop-In Bereavement Center wrote after the tsunami in 2004, and how we talked about that concept of collective or communal grief. Natural disasters are a powerful example of this kind of grief, and now, of course, we also have the global impacts of COVID-19. But there are many other sides of grief that are too often overseen.
The only way to liberation from the fear and anxiety that grips us as we face extinction is to face the truth of our suffering. We need to grieve what we have lost and the ways we experience systems of domination and oppression. We need to grieve when others suffer and the ways we are complicit in causing suffering. We need to grieve for those we have lost as a result of systems that do not have all our best interests at heart. And we need to grieve for the suffering experienced by animals, rivers, streams, forests, and oceans. We need to grieve until our hearts break open. I'm Karen Larby, and I'm a campaigner, trainer, facilitator, writer, event producer, public speaker, and recovery advocate. I'm pleased to say that I've been selected as a finalist for the upcoming Weaving Grief, the Body and Transformative Justice Retreat hosted by Global Environment Network. The retreat will explore how embodied grief practices can support environmental advocacy and transformative justice here in the UK. And my hope is that this retreat will help me journey towards creating spaces where we can alchemize our grief, connect to the emotions stored in our bodies, and deepen into transformative justice to enable us to come into right relationship with ourselves, each other, and the planet.
I was lucky enough to meet Karen personally a few years ago in London, and I was amazed by her. I mean, she's fierce and driven and passionate, like you can literally feel the flames when she talks. But then she's also this super sweet and kind human being. Karen first became interested in grief after reading Active Hope by Joanna Macy and Chris Johnston. This book explores an early work of Macy herself called The Work That Reconnects, and in the heart of both lies the same idea: finding ways to respond to the current planetary emergency with resilience and creative power. So that you have a bit of a background on Karen's work and vision, and also because I think it's really worth a few words, The Work That Reconnects is a framework and methodology for personal and social change, and it unfolds as a spiral journey through four stages. Coming from gratitude, honoring our pain for the world, seeing with new, ancient eyes, and last going forth. Here's Karen again.
I have written previously about the importance of cultivating gratitude in the face of catastrophe. So I'm slightly nervous, but very excited about stepping into the next phase of the spiral, which is through navigating grief and honouring our pain for the world. This retreat has come at a time where I have been alchemizing my own grief for the world and questioning, in both moments of solitude and in beloved community, how I see myself, my place in the world, and the work I'm here to do. The last year in particular has been a time for grief for those we have lost and continue to lose, both human and the more than human, due to the multiple pandemics of COVID-19, white supremacy and environmental destruction and more. It has also been a time, for me in particular, a time of grieving old ways of viewing and being in the world. And this course feels like the perfect place for me to learn how to create spaces where we can connect with our hearts, explore our grief, and transform our pain into powerful fuel for action.
Karen is currently running a crowdfunding campaign that will help her meet the costs of the Weaving Grief Retreat and also roll her sleeves up and finally get to do what she's been talking about for years. In her own words, creating spaces where we can connect with nature, allow our ancestral wisdom to heal us and compose our grief. If you want to support her, follow the link in the description of this episode and consider donating. And my dear Karen, thank you very much for sharing your fire with us. To close this episode dedicated to fire, I have something to propose to you. It's a sun bath. So, well, definitely you'll need a sunny day for this. So if today is not the case, you can just come back to this piece of this episode anytime that the sun hits your window. And if it's sunny right now already, well, here we go. The idea here is to get as much exposure to the sun as possible. So I will leave the logistics to you. You can stay indoors with the window open so that the sun is actually reaching you, or you can go out to your garden or balcony if you're lucky enough to have one of those. And you can sit on a chair or lie on your back, whatever that makes more sense for you and your body. But before you settle here, we're going to mobilize our joints a little so we can actually start to build some nice energy. I want you to circle your wrists, both of them, both directions. Okay, so take a bit of time. Hey, maybe you'll hear some cracks in there. Take it easy. It's okay. And remember to change directions. And then you can use some support to circle your ankles, one at a time if you're standing, or you can do both together if you're sitting. Okay, so remember, both feet, both directions. And your circles go as wide as you can get them. Okay, and to continue, I'm going to ask you to stand up with your feet just a bit wider than hip width, hands on your hips, and you're going to start drawing circles with your pelvis, just trying to keep your torso still, okay? So we're trying to give as much mobility to our pelvis as possible. One direction first, you're circling your pelvis, exactly. Keep going, just breathe naturally for this. And then the other direction for just a few more seconds. Nice. And to finish, let's warm up our neck and be very gentle here because the neck is very delicate. I want you to stay straight so you can stay up or just sit down, totally up to you, with your shoulders totally relaxed, your chest wide open, and from here you're going to start turning your head over to one side and then the other, as if you were saying no with your head. Okay, careful with the movement. If you feel that you're getting dizzy at some point, just shorten up the movement a little. Good, just a few more seconds here. And we're going to do the opposite, okay? As if you were saying yes with your head. Okay? So you tilt your head up and down. Good. Take it easy, especially as you look up towards the ceiling. So don't go too far there. Just keep it safe and simple. Okay, now that we have built up some nice heat already, you can settle in your chosen spot in the sun and you can close your eyes, take a few deep breaths to ground yourself. And as you breathe, begin reflecting on your inner strength, your fire, the part of yourself that is confident and powerful. Picture that part of yourself as a fire burning inside of you. It may be fierce and strong, or it may only be a spark. Feel the powerful sun shine on you. With each breath, pull the fierce, fiery, hot energy into your body. Picture its fire adding to your own inner fire. With each breath, picture it growing and expanding. Continue to breathe in the sun's fire. Absorb it as long as you're able. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Start bringing some movement back to your body little by little, one joint at a time, as we did in the beginning of this ritual. And just know that when you rise, you will continue to carry that fire with you. Whenever your confidence wanes or you need to access your inner fire, picture it burning inside of you. This was Mind and Body, a podcast funded by the Newham COVID-19 Community Grant from Newham Local Authority. Produced and created by me, Elena Diaz, for all beneficiaries and friends of the Drop-in Bereavement Centre in London, UK. Thanks for listening and have a beautiful day.